So I asked you guys about who you'd pick to read your audio Bible, and my list, and I gave you my whatever grid of nine, or if you will. By the way, the guy in the bottom right in my picture, if you looked at it, is Bernard Hill. That's the guy who played Theoden in Lord of the Rings. Like, the speeches he gives, whether it's the grand speech in front of the army, or he's got a couple of monologues where he's alone with another person or just talking to himself, he just his delivery is so spot on. But I think if I could only pick one, it would be Robin Williams. Robin Williams was a huge influence to me. I mean, come on, who can be like Mrs. Doubtfire and do his stand-up and be Peter Pan and be Mork? I mean, I grew up on Mork and Mindy. If you have no idea what that is, it's an old sitcom, but like his, you know, his Nanu Nanu that he would do at the end, he has such a gentle voice. And he actually was a huge influence on me as a teacher, believe it or not, because I remember watching Robin Williams' stand-up and thinking, somebody had this guy as a seventh grader. Like, really? And if I had Robin Williams as a seventh grader, what would I do with him? Like, really? Like, how would I teach seventh grade Robin Williams? And then, of course, Dead Poets Society is just a fantastic film in all respects. And anyway, so I say all that because what I want you to think of is Robin Williams, or whoever your person is, reading this psalm as best you can. Like, I don't know, I just think that would be awesome. Like, what would it sound like to hear Robin Williams read a psalm, that kind of thing, or Jim Cummings or whoever? Because today, and I hope you're getting sick of hearing me say this, but today I'm after your hearts. Like, I don't know that necessarily you're going to learn anything intellectually when you leave today. In fact, a lot of the stuff, I don't know that I'm going to be able to make explicit connections, but a lot of the stuff I'm going to say overlaps with Psalm 46 that Pastor Mike talked about. That's good news. A lot of your pastors should be very repetitive to each other. It shows we're talking about the same things. Not that I'm a pastor, but anyway. But I want your heart to be stirred as you read the Psalms. And so to that effect, that's why I want you to think about having your dream Bible reader reading it, and then that puts all kinds of pressure on whoever does read the text, especially poor Michael now. Just go read all 50 verses here. And let me give you two more analogies, and then we'll finally get into the text to try to give you an illustration of what I'm after. So the first one will be from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Second one will be from personal life. And again, I'm telling you these stories to get at a point. So, and I'm asking this not to shame you. Like, this just tells me, because I'm old enough now that I make references to films that most people in the room have not seen. I made a reference to The Matrix last year, and all the kids were like, what? Who? Anyway, so how many people have not seen Raiders of the Lost Ark? It's okay if you haven't. Okay, all right. Do yourself a favor and watch it at some point to be a better, yeah, it's the first Indiana Jones movie. Okay, anyway. I think, wow, how's that possible?
I just offended you.
No, it's not at all, not at all, not at all. Those are the people who say they fall asleep during Lord of the Rings. But anyway, so good on you. So if you've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark, and if you haven't, for real, look this up because it's a worthwhile scene. It's the part where Indy has to find, he's in the map room and he puts the staff of Ra in. So if you don't know, and it's not this big a deal, but just to set it up. So basically there's a scene where he's got this pole with, you know, this big fancy crystal on the top of it, and he has to put it in a certain place, and then the sun shines through the crystal and it'll point out where this artifact is hidden. But if you watch the scene, you know, it's a huge buildup, right? Like, big musical score, you know, it takes 10 minutes to get there. It's like the time they first set foot on the Star Trek Enterprise, if you've seen the first Star Trek movie. But it's this big buildup, and, you know, the sun's slowly coming up. And then there's this moment when finally the sun hits the crystal and, you know, just shoots this beam of light out, and it's this, you know, big grand thing. Here's why I tell you all that. Because I think whenever we read the Bible, just whenever we do Christianity, there are BFOs, blinding flashes of the obvious. These, I call them, staff of Ra moments, where you don't learn anything new. The sun has always been there. The map room, the circumstances of your life have always been there. But something happens. The crystal is in just the right spot. The circumstances are at just the right place. Your heart is in just the right place. Everything lines up, and something that you always knew just burns through the crystal of life and just lights up with this new vibrancy. And that's what I think the Psalms are after, and that's what I'm after today. Now look, is that going to happen in this classroom? Probably not. But I want to set up the Staff of Ra. I want to set up the map room. I want to set up the window so that when the sun hits, it comes alive. And then here's my second illustration, and then we'll finally get in the text. I guess I could have asked this question, but I'm curious. Anybody know a great cook or baker? Maybe you are a great cook or baker who does not use recipes, measuring cups. They just do it by hand, and it turns out amazing. Anybody got somebody to know? Yeah. Do you do that?
Yeah. All the time.
Okay, that's fair. Anybody else?
My mother-in-law.
Yeah. True story.
100%.
That's awesome, man. Okay, well, I want you to be that person. So in my life, she's passed on, and dear Jesus, I'm looking forward to seeing her again. But Cherie Peters was somebody that we knew who, my goodness, she could, like, you could give her two sticks and gravel and she would make cake. Like, she was amazing. But I love to watch. I don't like to cook at all. Okay. Like genuinely one of my favorite experiences is a sit down restaurant because somebody else makes it and somebody else cleans it. And all I do is sit there and eat it. And that is just fantastic. Anyway, but Cherie Peters, like, it was amazing to watch her work. She had measuring cups and, you know, she had, you know, whatever, teaspoons and stuff like that. But I never saw her use them. She's just like, oh, we put this much flour and we'll add a pinch of this and we'll do that. And like, it would just turn out amazing. Now, here's why I say all that. Because for her, this happened very organically. Like, it just was part of who she was. And that's the way I want our Bible reading and our Bible living out to be. Yes, you can get checklists, and don't hear me wrong, okay? I'm not against checklists or task lists or, you know, programs or Bible memorization or anything like that. But I think in our dream world, it would just be such an integral part of our hearts that we cry out to Jesus naturally, that we love our neighbor, that we just do things the way that Italians cook and mother-in-laws and Cherie Peters just put things together, and it just turns out. So I say all that because that's what I'm hoping happens as well. So I don't know if you can put those three images together, your great audio Bible reading, the Staff of Ra, brilliant flash of the obvious, and a great cook who doesn't need or use recipes and that kind of thing. But that's where we're going. That's what I'm hoping Psalm 18 produces in us, to be the kind of people who just naturally, because of what Jesus has done, and because it's so deep in our souls, and because we treasure it so much, we just naturally rejoice and rest in the mighty loving God who delivers us thanks to Jesus' covenant faithfulness. So that's where I'm going. So I say all that, so we'll finally get into the text, and we're not going to cover it at all. We're just going to read it, and I'm going to ask you basically if you have any Staff of Ra hits, if you will, in each section, and we're going to flow through it and hopefully get a feel, if you will, for what it's like to be a no recipe, no measuring spoon Christian, if you will. So if somebody be so kind as to read the first three verses, and for clarity, I should have put verse zero. If you would, I want you to read that part. If you look at verse 18, you see the like pre-psalm title, you know, for the music director, a Psalm of David thing. If you would, I'd ask you to read that too, because this is actually a pretty long intro. A lot of psalms don't have an intro at all, and this one's pretty long, so I think it's important to bear on the rest of the psalm. So basically, if somebody would read verses basically 0 through 3, please.
To the choir master, a Psalm of David, servant of the Lord, who addressed the Lord. The Lord rescued him from the hand. All he said, I love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress. My God, my rock and my strength. My shield and the horn of my salvation. I call upon the Lord.
Magnificent. Thank you. So Robin Williams would have done it almost as good. But so, so there's this whatever, I don't know that it's a rule, but there's this principle in literature that the opening scene or the first 10 minutes or whatever sets up the rest of whatever the piece is going to be. You know, as I spin bike, I've taken to watching Disney Plus shows, and like they just start so slow, and I'm not sure they ever get faster, truth be told, but they start so slow. And it's like, that doesn't have to be the case. Like Raiders of the Lost Ark, you watch the first 20 minutes of Raiders of the Lost Ark, you've already gotten your tickets worth, period. But like, you know what the rest of the film is about. So I say all that because here's our opening. And what's the theme, if you will, or a theme maybe is a better way to say it, that David's making very clear?
Where does your, like, fill in the blank, rock, refuge, field, corn, salvation, stronghold?
And so that's the knowledge part, and the emotion that David feels because of that knowledge is? Thankfulness, joy, love. By the way, isn't that a great opening? I love you, Lord, my strength. I'm sorry, Ryan, I had to cut you off.
No, you didn't.
Well, no, I just didn't hear you. Well, you got good stuff too, man.
I interrupted you.
You got good stuff, absolutely. Go ahead.
I just said safety.
I
agree with everything that you said, but like rock, fortress, refuge, like those are things that you would reference.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you read David's story, another one of my questions is, if the Bible were acted out, who would be who? And like, for me, I think David would be, and you can agree or disagree, I think a great David would be Chris Pratt. Like, he's just versatile. He's got just enough boyishness to him that he could do it, but he's got just enough seriousness that he could do it. You know, anyway, I mean, Chris Pratt's like everybody, right? Garfield, Mario. I can't even think of who else Chris Pratt's been. But anyway, my point is, when you look at David's life, he's been all over the map, man. You know, shepherd, hero of the day, outlaw. And now this is the point in time when he has been rescued from all his enemies and presumably has been set up as king. And this is the song that he sings. So it makes perfect sense. And he's rejoicing and resting in the mighty loving God who has delivered him. So let's look at this rescue. Now, this is going to be a long section, and I'll confess right up front, this is my favorite section of the psalm. I love this section. And whenever I've actually taught Psalm 18 before, years ago, it's just weird. As a teacher, there's a couple of passages, like Ephesians 2 comes up like every 5 years, which is a great passage. But there's other passages like, oh, we've never covered Lamentations 4. But so when Psalm 18 came up again, it was like, hey, I love this section. So anyway, sorry, I'm putting way too much pressure on whatever poor chap has to read this. But this is going to be the rescue. And this is David's poetic description of God coming to rescue him. And here's my card on the table already. I just think this is absolutely beautiful because this is the same God who rescues us. And think of what Pastor Mike said about, you know, God rescuing us in Psalm 46 and being our refuge and very present help in times of trouble. And just listen to the poetry and the beauty of God being stirred up to rescue his beloved and know that that's the God who's rescuing us. So anyway, that's the setup. I just think it's absolutely glorious, kind of scary, but glorious. So if somebody be so kind as to read David's poetic description 4 through 18.
Of the brightness of his presence, cloud of man, their souls, and souls of water, the wolf, the eye of man, he shot his arrow in his hand. How is this? Last of breath from the God.
Man, that's just magnificent. You almost want to, again, apparently it's fanboy day, but you almost want to let Peter Jackson, sorry, I couldn't think of who made the Lord of the Rings movies, but you almost want to let Peter Jackson, like, here's an unlimited budget, just put that on film for whatever. But like for real, man, like that's just, oh, that's what it was like for God to come rescue David. You know, he found out, he heard David's cry, God up in his temple hears David cry, and he is stirred up. Like, not just, well, I'll get to it when I get to it, or well, he got himself in this mess, or, you know, he can handle it, or whatever. Like smoke comes out of his nostrils. He rides on the cherubim. The waters are laid bare. Like, everything is terrified at the coming of this God to do what? To rescue David, to deliver his beloved. And that's, I mean, it's nowhere near as dramatic, but that's what it's like when God rescues us. That's what it's like when God sees our financial problems and is going to do something about it if we'll just trust him. That's what it's like when your AC goes out and Austin Foote voluntarily gives up his AC unit in his attic to, and even walks it down the stairs. I was so floored by that. That thing was heavy. Anyway, but like that's what it like, and that's what it's like when somebody comes to keep your kid at the last minute's notice because you found out you had to go deal with X, Y, or Z or whatever. And I mean, those are relatively small, but still really big ones. But like that's what's going on in terms of heaven as the Lord is coming to rescue us. And that's just like worldly stuff. Like, then you think about God rescuing us from sin or the terrible things that happened to us. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that suddenly everything suddenly peaches and roses and stuff like that. But this is how the Lord delivers his people. And this is the glory and the weight that he attaches to rescuing his people. So anyway, sorry, I just, like I said, I love this passage, man. I love this picture of Jesus coming to rescue us. I don't know, maybe I've got some kind of hidden damsel in distress thing going on deep down. But any particular image or whatever from there that maybe was either a staff of raw moment or that just struck you as glorious and beautiful or confusing, you can say that too. I shouldn't make assumptions.
Safety with like, the idea of what was outside of that, what the danger
was, what, like, I feel like then for like expounds upon that.
This is what.
Here. Well said. Well said.
Yeah, the imagery of how the text is coming to save us is like overwhelmingly large. It's this mm-hmm. person that is just like, Haley and I just finished watching Reacher. And like, we're all sinners.
so, graphic in a lot of language.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Oh, it's not a TV show?
It's great. It is big, see? He's a big dude. He's a big dude. Like, and so, my point in saying that is like, he makes everyone around him look so small, but mm-hmm. it's like, that's how we fathom, or that's how we think and process, like, oh, that's a big guy. Like, if that's a big guy, like, this text just dwarfs him.
And him.
Thinking of someone who can literally just, like, rain arrows down, as, you know, he's riding a cherubim, and there's these clouds of smoke, and he's, like, I'm imagining someone literally, like, taking and throwing them. Like mm-hmm. that, the magnificence of that, the marvel of that is just, can't even begin to fathom or process what that would look like in real life. But it's describing that, mm-hmm. and it's like that's who's coming to save
you. Beautifully said.
I don't know. That's yeah. It's mm-hmm. BFO.
Yep. It's well said, man. And two things just in response that Ryan's comment made me think of. One, a lot of this description echoes God rescuing the Israelites in Exodus from Pharaoh, you know, the hailstones and fire and parting waters and stuff like that. But what's amazing about this is God coming to rescue one guy, not the nation, one guy, his David, who loves him. And that's just, man, like, maybe you're in the midst, maybe you haven't been rescued yet from whatever is going on, you know, I don't know. But like, it's coming. This is what's going on. Now, it might not happen till we die or Jesus gets back. You know, I don't know, that that's God's timeline. But like, this is what's going on behind the scenes, if we could see it. Man, that's glorious stuff. I had one other thing, but Joe, did you want to say something? I couldn't tell. Okay. You're a great cheerer. And hobby horse for a moment, and I'll try to get right off it. But like, for real, the way Ryan just described using the TV show Reacher is one of the ways that we as Christians do that no recipe thing. Like, everything becomes a means of seeing and experiencing Jesus. Like, why is the Lord of the Rings so great? Answer, because the Lord of the Rings is a teeny little picture of how great Jesus is. We need these things. We need pictures. We need good food. We need enjoyable things. We need difficult experiences. You know, these are all ways that we experience Jesus and point to Jesus. I think it was John Piper wrote this, but somebody wrote a book about John Calvin and his talk about, I'll just tell you the title. The title was With Calvin in the Theater of God. And the idea was that the world is God's theater. It shows us God in whatever way. And so whatever it is, whether it's the Reacher TV show or whether it's, you know, another show or whether it's sports or whether it's food or whether it's family or whatever, these are all things that should, if we are resting and rejoicing in our mighty loving God, point us to Jesus. You know, God is so much bigger than this, or this is a little picture of how God is, or, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. Anyway, Hallie just was telling Brent, and I love my wife. God gave me the best one ever. But Hallie was telling Brent yesterday, he was watching some, whatever, science fiction video game or something. And she said, now Brent, if you can believe that human beings came up with this, had the imagination to come up with this, who knows what heaven will be like and what God will come up with for us. I was like, that's how you teach a 7-year-old. Way to go, you. I love you.
He's into Star Wars. So it's like all the diversity. All of that is what you come up with in the AI of like Avatar or like fungi. What is heaven going to look like? Our finite minds can look at something pretty beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Eye has not seen, ear has not heard those things which the Lord has prepared for those who love him. Good stuff. All right, let's game on, shall we? And if you got something else, just feel free to interrupt, please. Let's go through verses 19 through 26. I call this the righteous reason. This is where David's going to describe why God rescued him. And at least off the cuff, if you're like me, it could make you balk. It's like, wait a minute, that doesn't quite line up with saved by grace, but let's wrestle with it. So if somebody would, read verses 19 through 26, and let's see what's going on, please. Beautiful. Okay, so, and maybe this isn't the first place your mind went, but the first place my mind went, Mr. Critical or whatever, was like, wait a minute. Did anybody else other than me see the at least apparent problem? Okay, well, so that's true. So the problem is, wait a minute. What happened to, we are all unrighteous and there is no one pure before God and da, 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 da. Now, to be fair, maybe and probably this is pre-Bathsheba David. You know, if he's writing this right after basically he's been installed as king, he probably hasn't screwed up with Bathsheba. But even then, like, David should know better than to say, he rescued me because I'm righteous. Like, what gives? So let me give you my thoughts, because you got to take the scripture in the whole of its context, right? So as usual, I'm going to pull out I'm going to pull out my triptych card, and let's walk it through the triptych. Let's walk it through the original audience, Then let's point it to Jesus, and then let's get to us. But let's not get to us until we do original audience and Jesus. So, original audience. Of course, this is David talking. And to be fair, when he says righteous and blameless, he does not mean absolutely squeaky clean, perfect. He means blameless as in he has walked in the ways of the Lord. You know, by and large, he has followed his God. He has obeyed the commandments of the Torah. This is kind of used the same way in the book of Job, that we are told Job is a blameless and upright man. Not perfect, but he's been good. And now let's think about this here. And maybe this, I'm hypothesizing, but maybe this is why the text goes out of its way to tell us this is what he wrote after Saul had finally been defeated. If you read the story of David and Saul, David was very upright in his relations with Saul. I mean, Saul was... It's like if you've ever seen Band of Brothers, which you should if you haven't, but if you've ever seen Band of Brothers, there's this great line where one of the guys says, you don't salute the man, you salute the rank. And David saluted Saul's rank a lot because Saul was a terrible guy, tries to kill David, takes his wife away, just, I mean, horrible, horrible dude. And yet David respected him because he was the Lord's anointed. He was the king. David had several opportunities to kill him, and he doesn't. At one point, if you remember, he actually cuts off the corner of Saul's robe and then shows it to him later to say, look, I could have got you, but I didn't. And he even feels guilty about cutting the robe of the Lord's anointed. If you read that story, he's like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. He's the king. I shouldn't have cut his robe. Anyway, so I'm telling you all this to say, David had acted uprightly. So, I mean, Saul's coming after him to kill him. David's plan is not, well, I'm going to kill him first, or, well, this is how the Lord has appointed that I get to be king, or whatever. That's not where David goes. David goes, okay, I'm going to do what God told me to do, and I'm going to respect my king. I'm going to love my king and trust God to come rescue me in his good time. So he had acted uprightly. By the way, this is kind of a bad example, but if you ever have a bad boss, I love the example of David as how you respect someone in authority that, you know, you just don't like them, but you still need to respect their authority, because that's exactly what David does for Saul the whole time. So anyway, that's my first answer. Original audience, David, one, blameless doesn't mean perfect, and two, he had acted very uprightly. There's this great line that supposedly Abraham Lincoln said it. I don't know. Abraham Lincoln's kind of like Winston Churchill, probably like 80% of the things attributed to him he didn't actually say. But there's this great line that I remember hearing, when things go wrong, don't go wrong with them. When things go wrong, don't go wrong with them. And in David's life, a lot of things went wrong, and he did not go wrong with them. He stayed upright and blameless. Now, that's original audience. But then, of course, the middle triptych is Jesus. And, you know, none of us can say what David is saying here in these verses. You know, none of us can say, I have walked uprightly, I've been righteous, blah, 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 blah. But you can say it through Jesus. Jesus did it for us. He's the one who walked uprightly, and it's his righteousness, his blood, that we plead whenever we cry out to God for help. I mean, I love the fact that you are just as saved if you have, I don't know, just lost your temper or indulged in horrific gossip or something, as if you had just led the entire Brave Stadium to Jesus when you got on the Jumbotron or something like that. Like, you are just as loved by Jesus, exactly the same in both of those circumstances, because it's not about you. It's about what Jesus did. And that's just, oh, that's glorious stuff. And so then finally, how's that apply to us? I already tried to tell you just with Jesus being our righteousness, but there is a call for us to be upright. You know, you can't, if you really do belong to Jesus, you're going to walk like him. You're going to carry out that new birth creation. And you know, we can't say that we love him and then walk another way, as 1 John said. Psalm 66:18, if I have hidden sin in my heart, I will not cry out to him. Like, there is something about sin separating us from God, not necessarily legally, but like, it just, I don't know, like, to me, and maybe this is more than you want to know, the worst part about sin, I mean, the consequences are awful, but the worst part of sin is the broken relationship with God that you feel afterward, if that makes any sense. You know, just like any other relationship, if you break that relationship, like, I don't know, like the intimacy just isn't there for a while or whatever. And that's what's so terrible about sin. So anyway, long story short, David was blameless. Jesus is our blamelessness, and so we ought to pursue blamelessness so far as we can. All right, that's my attempt to wrestle down 19 through 26. Any other thoughts, questions, clarifications? All right, we got 6 minutes and we're halfway through. I'm sorry, go ahead. Here, here. And that is actually very good news. Oh, good stuff. Anything else? Okay, so now David's going to break into this beautiful praise. And I said this a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember if it was Michael or Joe teaching. I interrupted him and said this, but praise is delight in who God is and what God does. And this is where David's heart's going to go next. Again, think of this no recipe Christian, if you will. You guys are going to use no recipe Christian in some other context, and people are going to be so confused. But a no recipe Christian just bursts out in spontaneous praise from time to time. And that's where David's going to go next after talking about this rescue and the reason for his rescue. So if somebody would read verses 27 through 36, please.
By you, I can run against you. By my God, I can run against you. God is his way. God the Lord. God who put me made my way for me. Words of that mouth of wrong.
Excuse me, beautiful. I mean, isn't that just a fantastic description of who our God is and what he does for us? Anybody got a particular, and I don't expect this, I know it's right off the cuff, but anybody got a particular image from that section that just struck you or was particularly poignant? Here, here. Once again, the theater of God, right? You look at a deer and deer don't trip. They're just the most, and it's amazing because their feet are like, you know, that big, right? But that's how absolutely secure they are, and that's how secure God has made us. Also very lovely, graceful image, right? Because pigs don't trip either, but it just doesn't carry the same imagery, right? So watch some. You'll see some pig trip and send me like memes or something like that. But any other just striking images, just bathe in that beauty. I love verse 35. You've given me the shield of your salvation. Your right hand upholds me. The right hand of God Almighty upholding me is just such a glorious thought. But then, for some reason, as an English teacher who loves paradox, this just hits me. Excuse me. Your gentleness makes me great. I mean, there's just so much to think about there. God's humility in stooping to raise us great. Jesus is being humiliated in his life and on the cross in order to raise us up. And I don't know. Your gentleness makes me great. For some reason, that just really echoes in the chamber of my heart in a beautiful way. There's a staff of Ra that I can plug in and get a beam of light to shine down at just about any moment. Just great stuff. Okay. If somebody would, read 37, and you can either stop at 45 or just man through all the way to 50, or if somebody stops at 45, somebody else will read through to 50, and we'll close this thing out. And it is high noon, so if you guys need to leave, I am not at all offended. But if somebody's willing, read 37 through the end, please.
My enemies and overtook them. I did not turn back till they were destroyed. I crushed them so they could not rise. They fell beneath my feet. Guard me with your strength for battle. You humbled my adversary before me. My enemies turned their backs in flight and not destroyed my enemies. I cried for help, but there was no one to save them. So, Lord, that did not answer.
as fine as windblown nuts. I trample them like mud in the street. Never making me attack to the people that made me like the head of nature. Well, I did not know now certainly. Corners cower before me. All through smart and trembling from the strongholds. Lord lives, praise be to my crop, exalted be God my Savior. He is the God who avenges me, under me, vengeance of my enemies. Exalted me above my foes, and the violent man who rescued me. Triple, I will praise you, Lord, among the nations. Gives his king great victories, shows unfailing love to his anointed. Savior.
Well read, thank you kindly. So, the next to last section, at least as I divided it up, it's somewhat arbitrary. Just talk about this great victory over his enemies, and this is what's going to happen to us. Like, the sicknesses that plague us, the difficult relationships that plague us, the difficult people that plague us. Eventually, at one point, we will have victory over them. We will be more than conquerors through him who loved us. This light and momentary affliction will gain up for us a far greater eternal weight of glory. And we can say these things. And one thing to note, by the way, I'll just say this for my application, and maybe this was for me, I don't know if it'll help you, but note once again that David does not take things into his own hands. Like, the Lord gives him victory over his enemies. Like, he doesn't go out to seek his own revenge. Like, if somebody's done something wrong against you, like, you can let it go. Like, don't be stupid, you know, be careful around them and don't necessarily trust them in the future. But you don't need to go out of your way to make things right or make sure the world knows what they did wrong or whatever, that kind of thing. And I find that very comforting. There are times that something goes not the way you want it to, or a decision is made that you don't agree with, and you can either let it go, which isn't good for your soul, or you can fight against it, which isn't good for your soul, or you can be like, okay, God, you're going to make this right. You're going to give me victory over my enemies. And in the meanwhile, I'm going to be faithful. That's what I do. I don't have to seek my own revenge. I don't have to take things into my own hands. Again, I don't know. Maybe that's just for me, because I have a very strong justice bent. Like, things need to be right. And if they're not right, they need to be made right. And people's feelings be darned. Or anyway, so, but like this comforts me. Like, it will be made right. I just got to trust Jesus to do it. And then it closes with that glorious praise. It opens and closes with praise. And note that the foundation for the praise is that God is faithful because he has covenanted with David. Something else I've hit a couple of times as we teach through the Psalms is God's covenant faithfulness. Why can David count on God's faithfulness? Because God promised it to him in a covenant. Verse 50, he shows faithfulness to his anointed, to David, and his descendants forever. Remember the promise to David that he would always have a descendant on the throne of Israel. God's going to make that happen. So, big idea, to rejoice, that's the main thing. Great happiness in who God is. And to rest. Wait for God, don't take it into your own hands. You just be faithful in the meanwhile. In the mighty, mighty, those verses 4 through 18, loving, covenant God who works for you, God who delivers us thanks to Jesus's covenant faithfulness. That's where I'm hoping we get to. Pardon, comments, thoughts, additions, retractions? Somebody want to pray us out and then we can go home and put Reacher on our watch lists? That's a joke, by the way. I mean, if you want to, go ahead and watch it. Okay, your summer reading is two R's, Raiders of the Lost Ark and Reacher. There you go. So somebody want to pray us out? Thank you, sir.
Our lives.
Amen.